Hello there. This is Eric Sinrod, your partner at Duane Morris in San Francisco, joined by my partner in London, Jonathan Armstrong. We're here with our weekly Tech Law 10 to talk to you about fast-breaking topics on a weekly basis where the law and information technology intersect. And we wanted to talk about some current events that are important and fascinating with respect to how and why and whether it's appropriate for there to be a potential shutdown of social networking services, for example, or cell phone communications when there's an interest in thwarting potential civil disobedience. And we've been seeing that as a possibility in London in the wake of the recent riots and here in the Bay Area with respect to protests having to do with BART, the Bay Area Rapid Transit System. So Jonathan, why don't we start with you and tell us about what's happening on your side of the pond, then we can flip it back to me.
Yeah, sure, yeah. So this is a reaction to the civil unrest that we've had here in the UK. And I have to say, from a purely personal point of view, that the knee-jerk reaction from some politicians would really put a Middle Eastern dictator to shame, to tie in with something else that's topical at the moment. The original wish to ban Twitter and BlackBerry Messenger seems to have come from Louis Mensch, who's a conservative MP here, who it would be fair to say is no stranger to self-promotion. She is on Twitter, and she, for example, has made additional allegations that in light of her raising the banning of Twitter, she says that her children have been threatened by Anonymous. Whether you can hack into children, I'm not awfully sure. And unfortunately, Louise's threats, which we're not condoning in any way, were thankfully not serious enough to pull her away from New York, where she is as we speak, to be at the side of the children that had been threatened. But that's by the by. It seems to me that there are two distinct things here. BlackBerry Messenger has been used during the riots, it seems, by the gangs to outrun the police. And they've been using BlackBerry Messenger, which is obviously encrypted, to pass messages between each other and move from location to location. So the riots in London were much more frightening, I think, than others that I've experienced and lived through, because the gangs were able to use BlackBerry Messenger, they could get on the tube, move to a different location. So we had rioting in maybe seven different locations, where previously it's been confined to one neighborhood. And obviously the gangs are more agile. They can move using BBM on the tube quicker than the police can respond overground in their vans. Now, I think in my mind, the use of BBM versus the use of Twitter, they're two very different things. Twitter, obviously, people spread messages about incidents occurring, and the police were able to listen into those messages, to respond to people who were saying things on Twitter. And indeed, we've had two convictions of two individuals who tried to raise a gang and raise civil unrest in their locale through Twitter. The police listened into those messages, and those two guys are now starting a four-year jail term for trying to incite a riot over Twitter. But it seems to me they're two separate things. And an opposition lord now, Lord Prescott, who was the Deputy Prime Minister under the Tony Blair administration, I think has also been collecting incidents of people who said they avoided the rioting through Twitter. They knew where the areas of unrest were, and they were able to respond in an agile way to the riot areas going on. And indeed, we had semi-spontaneous events the following day where people were arranging through Twitter to meet up, clean up the streets, and forward-thinking businesses like Starbucks, for example, were providing those businesses with refreshments because, again, the Twitterati had popularized these spontaneous outpourings of do-gooding to counteract the do-badding of the night before. So it seems to me that that we should distinguish between BlackBerry Messenger and Twitter. But I'm wondering if we ought to really be taking such a draconian step of suspending Twitter. Isn't it better that we localize the policing, jamming equipment, for example? I think you can get for about $10 off the internet. I don't know how good it is, but is it better to jam cell phone coverage in specific areas where there is unrest? That would block out Messenger. Obviously, it would block out Twitter and Facebook, but it would be localized. And is that better than a blanket ban on social media, which, as Prescott's evidence suggests, can actually be used to get people out of areas of trouble, and then you can use other means to police those that are looking for trouble. I mean, what's the Bay Area experience, Eric? What's been the experience in the U.S.?
Well, and that's a very good question, and I do want to talk about that. You know, my understanding was, at least via press reports, that Prime Minister Cameron in England was talking about not sort of blanket shutdown or prohibition of social networking, but more, you know, specific targeting and blocking of communications with respect to people where there was real actual knowledge their conduct and organizing activities could lead to violence and dangerous situations. That seems more tailored and more specific and perhaps more legitimate. You know, I think the concern among many is that, you know, obviously there are, you know, speech issues involved, and if you have just a blackout in a certain area, you know, jamming in a certain geographical location where you're not only sweeping in and blocking communications that are intended to disrupt and cause civil disobedience, but also legitimate communications between people that just want to go about their lives personally or from a business standpoint, it could be a problem. And out here in the Bay Area, you know, there were some protests that were being organized in the wake of some shootings by BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit police officers, and BART then took it upon itself to block cell phone communications in certain areas to hopefully prevent protests that could turn violent. And there's been somewhat of an outcry since then. You know, BART's, my understanding is that BART's website's been hacked into as a result several times, and this is an ongoing matter. I believe there's some protests even designed to happen later today. And so the question is, you know, what is proper and what is not in terms of trying to thwart communications that could lead to dangerous situations?
Yeah, I mean, I think we don't yet know the scope of what David Cameron's proposing. And my worry, we call it a dangerous dog here in the UK. We had some legislation that was very reactive to dangerous dogs, which was very poorly drafted and never got to its purpose. And my worry is that we've got another dangerous dog here. I think the Home Secretary is meeting with some people next week to try and put some flesh on their knee-jerk reaction. I think some of what Louise Mensch has said actually makes sense. I mean, the most interesting proposal, I think, that she's had is to stop unrest-related items trending. And I think that's interesting. Obviously, it's not just as simple as saying to Twitter, stop the following keywords trending, because, as I think you have there, we have something called the mere conduit defense. So most social media entities won't want to be seen to be policing things like trending in any way, because then they would assume liability for content under defamation laws and so on. But if the government is intending to look at this seriously and maybe has a statutory provision which endorses the mere conduit defense and says that if you're cooperating with, you know, with a legitimate request of law enforcement, then that doesn't undermine your mere conduit defense, then that seems to me to be something that's worth looking at. But the government's going to have to invest time, I think, in understanding social media and how it works, rather than just react. I mean, what does the average man in the street over there think about what BART did, or are they thinking that that's a step too far?
I think it depends on the person, and I think we're seeing arguments from all sides. I think there are some people that want to be safe. And BART views as its primary mission that it will allow mm-hmm. passengers to travel from point A to point B in safety and in tranquility and in peace without threat of violence. There are others that really believe that freedom of speech is critically important, and they've grown used to being able to communicate when they're transporting themselves on BART via cell phone, et cetera. And they think that just because there's a prospect of some protest, you know, that shouldn't be shut down. And also, you know, our country does have a history of protest. I mean, once upon a time, we protested England, if you recall. And there was the Boston Tea Party. I mean, protesting in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. We do have freedom of assembly, and people are entitled to organize and voice their opinions. The question is, what happens when it tips over and there's the possibility that you could really have a dangerous context? And what can be done about that? And we're all sort of learning our way as we go forward right now. And plainly, you know, the new information technology that we have has so many beneficial aspects to it in terms of how we can communicate effectively, easily, in a broad-based way, and normally and hopefully for productive, lawful purposes. But what happens when those purposes are deemed not so favorable? And, of course, democratic nations have been blasting you know, more repressive regimes that have not allowed as much freedom of communication as we've had in our countries, and yet now the shoe's a little bit on the other foot, isn't it?
I think it is, and you're right. I mean, it does open us up to all sorts of allegations from more repressive regimes if we go down that road. And that's probably about all we've got time for this week. You can continue the debate online on our new LinkedIn group if you just use the groups search function, the top right hand of your LinkedIn screen, and search for TechLaw10. You'll see the heading there of a discussion. Do join in, do share your views. Any reasonable discussion is permitted, and we won't block your cell phone coverage if you want to say something. So that's about it for this week, Eric. My email address, if you prefer that, is jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. I'm at Twitter, ArmstrongJP. And Eric?
And I am ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. And thank you for joining us this week, and we'll come back to you hopefully next week. Take care.
Thank you. Bye now.